The idea the framers of the Constitution had was to give each state two senators so they would represent the states, and then give the senators six-year terms so they wouldn't have to worry so much about re-election. Maybe that didn't work out quite the way they planned. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. The number to talk with Senator Mark Begich is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. My advice is do it right now if you want to get through. A local call in Anchorage, 550-8422. Email talkalaskapublic.org. Senator Mark Begich has just entered the studio and will be our guest on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2013 PFD application with My PFD Info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Saturday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Pretty tight scheduling for Senator Mark Begich because there's doings in Washington. I would think if you're a U.S. senator, you're wanting to stay in touch because the idea of military action in Syria is being seriously contemplated. So I guess, Senator, we'll start with that. We'll start with that. Are you in touch with D.C. on this?
Well, we're in a constant, as you know, the issue is right there in front of us. We're watching it carefully as a former member of the Armed Services Committee, but now on the Appropriations Committee, which deals with one of the subcommittees on military action and military funding. I will tell you, we're watching it carefully. We're deeply concerned about the use of chemical weapons. It doesn't matter if it's by the rebels or by the government. Those reports are becoming more and more apparent that has occurred. And whatever action occurs in Syria needs to be an international action. It can't be just a unilateral by the U.S. And I am concerned that if we engage at any level that we don't get bogged down there and how we're going to pay for it. Now, it's frustrating at times, and I recognize the world, in many parts of the world, there is unrest. Syria, clearly. Egypt, also. And the use of chemical weapons is unacceptable, period. And we, again, have to do whatever we can with an international effort. But we don't, as a country, need to get bogged down in another war. And then even this activity, if we get engaged at any level, again, how we're going to pay for it. Because it always is amazing to me, Steve, to be frank with you. We're struggling every day just to get, programs to help our young people get food on their table, make sure in rural Alaska, Head Start programs, making sure we have money to take care of Indian Health Services, which got cut 8%. But somehow we can magically find money when there's an international engagement. Now, I understand we have a role, but we also have an obligation to the people of Alaska and America as a priority. So, I'm deeply concerned about the activity in Syria. We're watching it carefully. Chemical weapons are unacceptable. Needs to be an international effort. And we can't be bogged down, and we can't have troops on the ground.
Senator Mark Begich is our guest live in the studio. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. And email queries are already coming in. But before we get started, I think I'll take up state federal relations right away.
Sure.
Because we just had you know about the Citizens Commission on Federal Areas and
the government overreach thing they had down in
they've been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. I think it was Jay Hammond's idea originally. He said we need to have something looking out for the concerns of the state and all this federal land holdings. Mm-hmm. It's probably a good idea, but mm-hmm. Boy, the thing got out of proportion like I never saw before. And it was a summit. It was called a summit on federal overreach, and it was really quite political. I think you were there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Don Young.
Don came and Lisa came.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now today, you know, the head of the EPA
mm-hmm.
is in the state, and you know, you're not going out there with her to Lake Iliamna. So what's going on?
Sure. Well, first off, I'm not going out with her because she kind of scheduled a little late in the game. And, you know, I got a heavy schedule. And I was in Fairbanks yesterday. A couple days before that, I was in Barrow. I was in Kenai. Then I'll be back in Fairbanks end of this week. I was in the Valley in Anchorage. And that's in about 5 days. So that's a pretty compressed schedule. But I would say this. First, you know, on the government overreach, we have to remind people, and, you know, I have my battles, no question, with the federal government and certain agencies. You know, I think we all do. It doesn't matter. As an Alaskans, you know, we fight with the federal government more often than not. But at the end of the day, 25% of the state's operating budget is federal dollars. 50% of the capital budget is federal dollars. For every dollar we pay in a gas tax at the pump, we get $6 back from the federal government. For every dollar we pay in federal taxes, we get $2 back. Now, that's not to defend the federal government. That's explain to folks out in the community what we receive. On the flip side, every government will always have a battle with the government above them. When I was mayor, I was battling the state government every day. You know, they had billions in revenue coming in from oil and gas, and they gave cities a paltry $60 million a year to help offset property taxes. You know, when we wanted to build a road or a small little extender, and those who live in Anchorage will know this little section over there by Benny's Taco Wagon and the art store there between Benson and Northern Lights, we wanted to put that little road in. But Benson and Northern Lights were state roads. And we had to get these permits and spend a year dealing with them. And I said, not doing that when I was mayor. So we just built the road over a weekend, literally, and didn't ask for the permission from the state. So every government that has a government above them is going to complain. We're very loud about it on the federal government. EPA director in town, I invite everybody that I can to come to Alaska. As you know, I mean, we had an FCC commissioner here recently. We're going to have the Secretary of the Air Force here, the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, this Friday. We're going to have Secretary Jewell, the Interior Department Secretary. We're going to take up North Slope, the Air Force Chief of Staff. We're going to take up to Eielson Air Force Base. We bring them up, Senator Cantwell, who doesn't support us on ANWR, but Chair of the Indian Affairs Committee. Very important. Took her to Galena so we could see what Galena is about, but then took up the river to a fish camp, which he had never been to, despite not your radio show, but some other radio show complained that we brought her to Alaska. And my view was, why wouldn't we? She's the chair of the Indian Affairs Committee. We should. So we'll always have some arguments with the role of federal government. Our job is to find where we can get our control back, wherever we can. I just came from a summit. It's the Tribal Conservation Symposium Summit, just down the street here, where tribal groups have three or four, now five, I think, now have organized their efforts to manage their game and fish in their communities or other aspects of it in relation with the federal government, getting the federal government less out of it, more local control. That's good. But I can tell you, again, you know, we'll be back on these guys when we need to, and also we'll find common ground where we find it. But I just recall my times as mayor, how many times, and not just me, other mayors across the state would be beaten on the state government because of their overreach into our business in local communities. It was time and time again. So we have a role. I'll tell you one that I think the federal government does have a significant role in and should, and that's voter protection. As you know, now the Supreme Court has ruled. The state of Alaska was part of that court case to get us out from underneath the Justice Department's authority or regulation oversight onto our Voting Rights Act. And I think the Supreme Court made the wrong decision, and I think the state of Alaska should not have joined that lawsuit because we have problems in rural Alaska in getting access, especially early voting. And this is where you do want the federal government to make sure everyone's voting rights are protected and not in a situation where some may not. My two folks, Agatha and Andrea, Their grandmothers live in rural Alaska. They have a BIA card. They don't have a state ID. They never have. They don't have a driver's license. They don't drive. But now their BIA ID may not be able to be used. They might have to go get a state ID, and where are they going to get that? And where are they going to pay for that? It's like a poll tax. So there's a careful balance. But, you know, when the federal government's gone too far, the delegation is pretty unified.
Do you think the one thing you weren't unified on was confirming Gina McCarthy, who was up here now? Do you think you might have occasion to regret your yes vote?
No, because here's my view on appointments. I had the same view when I was on the Anchorage Assembly when we had different mayors. You know, Mayor Fink, which I, you know, didn't necessarily agree with him on a lot of things, but he wanted to assemble his team, and he had every right to do that. Now, I may disagree with his team policy, but that doesn't mean I should turn his people down. No difference than when I was mayor. I had members of that assembly that didn't like my politics, but they approved the people who I put in executive positions. In Gina McCarthy, I'm going to disagree with her. I know that on some issues, no question about it. But what I like about her, she's practical. She tells you straight out what she's thinking. And she's willing to go sit down with people. That's the most, or that's the least you can ask of an executive. And then, of course, try to convince them on our issues.
Well, we've already got some callers lined up for you, but I want to stay with the EPA before we head to the back to Syria.
And that's a wide swath of.
Okay, it's all inside the ballpark when you're a senator.
That's right. I love it.
Yeah, this one comes from Chicken, Alaska, where Teresa says, "Senator, thank you for the opportunity to address you from Interior Alaska. Last week, EPA compliance officers searching for Clean Water Act violations on federal mines. I think she means claims."
Claims, yeah.
Came onto family mines fully armed, SWAT team style. Some had agents simultaneously circling overhead the mines via aircraft. Are you aware of how the EPA, DNR, and DEC agents have come to such a poor and threatened impression of us? Thank you very much. And, I said, did this happen in Alaska? She said, yeah, last week.
Well, you know, Teresa, first off, that specific incident, I'd love to, if you feel comfortable, contacting our office so we can get a little more detail on it and we can do some follow-up. But second, if you notice toward the end of her email, she incorporated both federal and state in that, and DNR she had in that mix too. So it's not just the federal government. But I will tell you, they are overzealous at times. And I don't mean necessarily EPA, some of the enforcement officers. And we have to manage that. And what has happened over time is some people, some of these agencies, they become policymakers versus, dealing with the policy itself. And so on that incident, Teresa, I'm not familiar with the specifics, but I do know there have been some incidences, both on federal and state. If you recall, the state arrested subsistence users, you know, for trying to get food on their table. And you know, it goes both state and federal. And we have to, everyone kind of breathe deep for a little bit here and say, okay, what's the policy? What are we trying to do? Are the mines, and I'm a big supporter of a lot of the mines that have been going on. You know, we've Bokan and Niblack down southeast have done a good job in managing their affairs. Donlin Creek, I just saw one of the principals last night, talked to him about his project engagement he's having with the Bethel region to make sure it's done the right way, the environmental way, but also producing jobs for the community. What we have to do is not have an us and them kind of attitude and say, look, every project needs to be looked at. But if you now have this overzealous enforcement, then we need to pull back on them. Because it's not about just enforcing to get some fines. If there is a violation of the Clean Water Act, let's deal with that. But if it's just, we got to get some fines tallied up, that's totally unacceptable. And there are some interpretation issues. As you know, we'll pass a law, then there'll be a rulemaking process, which could take 2 years, 3 years, and then someone has to implement it. And when that goes to the ground, multiple layers down, the person on the back end is looking at, the rule, and they're looking at it and go, well, I guess this is what it means, so that's what I got to do. We have to have better management in that arena in the sense of training of our folks and consistent training. But when these issues pop up, the best thing that someone could do is contact our office immediately. so we can inject ourselves and find out what's going on here. And sometimes it might just be one person. I know on the East Coast with NOAA, a lot of issues around fishery enforcement, and we intervened. Net result is fishermen got their money back for the fines they paid, and there were some issues resolved there. But we didn't know about it until someone said, oh, by the way, and, you know, don't wait. Contact us immediately.
Okay, thank you, and I will pass that on to that listener. And it is, I mean, placer mining is going to make the water cloudy. And mm-hmm. So it's kind of a question of what you do with it afterwards, and that you're skookum legally as you start moving the water courses around.
That's right.
I can see where it might take aircraft, you know, to see
the overall view.
Yeah, I can see that. But boy, this sounds
a little more aggressive.
A little concerning.
Right. Okay. My brother Nick, who I know you know, Steve, is in the mining business, and that's one of his businesses. And so I hear about
yeah,
as you
do.
Can imagine. And he works with, you know, both private sector and some of the regional corps because of his mine crosses over some of the regions. But I hear about it. But, you know, that this case sounds maybe a little more overzealous than it should have been.
Let's go to Kodiak now, and Vicki joins the program. Vicki, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Senator Mark Begich.
Yeah, good morning, Steve, and thanks for showing up for the show there, Senator Begich.
You bet.
My question is, and you started off the program with it, it concerns Syria.
Yes.
And how we're going to handle Syria, Egypt, anybody over there in the Middle East. Right now we've got Polaris subs, two of them stationed out there. We've got Aegis ships that are also capable of launching the nukes, anything. Now, to me, you said right out that no boots on the ground, how we're going to handle it with no boots on the ground. So what is our intention to start launching missiles into the cities, Damascus, Ghouta, any of them? And that kills more civilians. So why would you not want to put boots on the ground rather than launch missiles that are very indiscriminate, just like drone strikes? I mean, they miss. But, Senator Begich, I beg you to get back to the Hill next week, late next week, and get on the bandwagon, get off the war wagon, and please, we can't start this. This is going to be a war that is just going to escalate.
Vicki, let me...
Lots of people. So your decision and what you say on a yes or no vote, hopefully we will let Congress vote at this time, not a president, and
Vicki,
let me try to clarify for Vicki. I did not say we should engage. What the question was, a broader question, and I'm very concerned about what our level of involvement would be at all. First, I will make it very clear here that this is a regional issue that Saudi Arabia and others need to be fully engaged in. They're now participating at a much higher level, both in the issues around Egypt, for example, than they were, you know, years ago, in the sense of supporting whatever action they feel is necessary there. Second, I supported us getting out of Iraq, Afghanistan. I mean, Afghanistan has cost us a lot of lives, families. I've been to many funerals. The impacts are going to be generational, and we cannot solve all the problems of the world, and we have to keep this in mind. That's why I say over and over again, the international community has to step up to the plate. And I got kind of a mixed comment there from you, because on one hand, you didn't want missile strikes, and I hear what you're saying there for sure, but then you said boots on the ground. Well, I'm not putting U.S. soldiers at risk again in a war that we could get bogged down in. I'm just not doing it. I mean, this last war is going to cost us, besides the thousands of lives we've lost, the thousands of individuals that are now disabled physically or mentally for generations to come, I'm not risking that. And at the same time, it will cost us trillions of dollars, our activity in Afghanistan and Iraq, for years to come. And look what happened in Iraq. Now they're siding with Iran. I mean, what did we do? And so I hear you, Vicki. I am very cautious about any engagement at any level. I know we have a couple senators that would love to be in there themselves, pulling the trigger. I'm not one of those.
Senator, telephone number, by the way, to speak with Senator Mark Begich live and on statewide on Talk of Alaska is 1-800-478-8255. Emails available at talkalaskapublic.org. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. And APRN's Peter Granitz is with us by telephone from Washington.
Peter doesn't get a chance to call in. What
he
the
wants
heck?
To, he wants okay. to bore in on this, okay, this Syria
Peter,
thing.
Okay, Peter, you do not get a call then after the show, as I was planning.
Toll free. Senator, I'm curious what your thoughts are on if we do get involved in this, and it looks, by all accounts, it looks like we're going to in some fashion. What does it do for relationships with Moscow, who is behind Syria 100%?
Well, I think it makes the road a lot rockier because, as you know, this is kind of Russia's last stand in the Middle East of their, it's probably their strongest ally. And to them, this is an important statement of how the U.S. gets involved or not. But let me backtrack here, Peter. Your assumption is that we're going to be engaged at some level. I think there's a lot of us that are very concerned about any engagement at all. And I understand, you know, the chemical weapons issue is totally unacceptable, but that's an international response that needs to be done, not a single entity in the case of the U.S.
It's hard to see that, we are mobilizing ships in the Mediterranean Sea. Secretary of State Kerry came out yesterday and said that there is something formulating. I mean, it clearly looks like something is going to happen soon.
I think you're right that I think the administration is trying to formulate a plan of action with Syria, and you know what that will be is not clear yet. And you know we're gonna. You know, Congress is going to be engaged. I mean, I'm going to be back there on Monday, Labor Day, and be back in Washington. And I'm going to tell you that a lot of folks have gone through now two engagements in the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, and there's a lot of caution. And you know, on the flip side, we're just now finally getting ourselves out of a financial mess that was laid on the table. I know when I came in the office in 2009, and we're slowly getting out of this. And you know, some of these guys that I serve with, that just want to get into every war they can find, never want to pay for it. But at the flip side, when it comes time to pay for the veterans and the military individuals, men and women who have served and now need services, they cringe at paying that. So I'm going to be one of those that is going to ask them very hard questions, and they shouldn't, I don't care if the president's a Democrat or not, as a Democrat, he shouldn't count on my issue and my support until we understand all the costs and what the engagements are, and I'm very reluctant.
But there might be an engagement before you're back in D.C.
Well, we will have, as a member of the Appropriations Committee, you know, you can only do so much engagement without money.
Is there going to be movement to cut off funding to the Pentagon for this?
I don't know. We'll see when we get back. But I'll tell you, Peter, they cannot go down this path without consultation and engagement with the Congress.
So the War Powers Act needs to be called up?
Well, as you know, there's some of us, we had a debate on the Appropriations Committee on this. And, we supported, I can't remember the final vote, but some of us supported that in situations of this nature, the president must inform Congress and engage Congress. Now, there were strong feelings on the other side. As you know, Senator Graham believes something completely different. And, you know, I agree that the president needs
Lindsey
to have flexibility.
Lindsey Graham from South Carolina.
Yes, Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. And I understand that the president needs his flexibility as a commander-in-chief. But at the same time, Congress needs to be informed. And Congress needs to be engaged. And, I've seen it from the outside with Iraq. I've seen it from the inside with Afghanistan. And these are very costly to human life and for American citizens and very expensive.
But the president said, it was well over a year ago, that the chemical weapons would be the red line. Was last week's action, is that your red line as well?
Chemical weapons are, unacceptable, but it has to be an international response, Peter.
That means
people. It can't be the U.S. carrying the weight of the world all the time. You know, Saudi Arabia and Jordan and others in that region need to step up to the plate. It means other countries around the globe, and this includes people like Russia and China. They need to step up. and quit playing the politics of the Middle East for leverage for their own political purposes and economic purposes?
Should Israel get involved?
I would assume that they are probably involved at some level already.
Well, the war never ended, I suppose.
Right. Hey, Peter, got a stack of calls.
Peter, you get out. Other time. Let's get Alaskan citizens on the phone. I can talk to you anytime.
I'll sit tight.
Okay. Stand down.
Thanks. APRN's Peter Granitz joining us by phone from Washington, where clearly, you know, it's ratcheting up.
It's clearly. And this, you know, as I mentioned, there's, you know, I can now show three examples. I mean, Iraq, I wasn't there for when that decision was made. Afghanistan, obviously, my time there is when it escalated and now peeling down. We have not been, I mean, people say we were successful in Iraq, but, you know, now they're allying with Iran, which, you know, you got to wonder what happened there. And on the flip side, Afghanistan, you know, we have a president there who's in charge, who at times complains about the U.S., then embraces us when he gets piles of cash, and then he complains about us when we're trying to get some management of al-Qaeda and other activities that are threatening our U.S. forces or allies. So, you know, we have to really be careful here, and I'm not going to be one of these that just jumps in. Do I believe chemical weapons should not be used? Absolutely. But well, international is what we need to be focused on.
Okay, let's leave it at that and go to Sue. She joins the program from Wrangell and something completely different. Sue, in Wrangell, you're on the air with Senator Mark Begich.
Good morning, Mark Begich.
Sue, we're having trouble hearing you.
Oh.
Definitely having trouble hearing
now. We're really having trouble. It doesn't sound like the telephone was totally in a different place from where she was talking to.
Right.
Okay, let's go to Gary. Joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Gary.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Senator Begich.
Yes.
I'm a Vietnam-era veteran and have been having medical issues for the past 10 years and dealing with the VA and attempting to get the issue resolved. What can I do to get some direct action? That's my first question. The next one is in regards to mental health disparities as outlined by the Surgeon General of the United States that deals with Alaska Natives and minorities.
Excellent. Let me try to do both those very quickly. First on, Gary, you shouldn't hesitate to connect with our office there in Fairbanks, Tom Moyer, but we just had the VA, the Undersecretary for the Veterans Administration, in Fairbanks yesterday for a symposium where we had several of his people, came up with them, some of his key people, talking about the services that are available and what we can do to improve the services and doing some casework. They have committed that they have about 500 cases that are more than a year old still pending, that they anticipate that they will be all resolved in some form or another by the end of September, beginning of the fiscal year, the next fiscal year. That is huge and good news. Now, again, I would ask you to contact our office and maybe we can do a little follow-up to see where that is within their system. Second, on mental health, this is a big issue. Matter of fact, I just was received an award from a large organization nationally about our work in our office and stuff I've been sponsoring regarding mental health services and what we're trying to do to improve it. In rural Alaska, one of the important aspects is, and this will sound odd to some, but I think you'll understand it when I describe it, we need to have good high-speed broadband connectivity in rural Alaska. Why is that important? Because telemedicine, mental health medicine through telemedicine, is one of the most powerful and most efficient ways to deliver services, especially in rural communities and especially in rural Alaska. Also creates a confidentiality where you can do it right out of your home and your privacy, so you're not having to have that stigma in a small community if you believe there is a perception that people might have because you're receiving services. We have gotten the Veterans Administration, for example, through work we did, they used to charge a co-payment for that service. Now they don't. It's free service, so you can get on if you're a veteran. You can get that service, that mental health service, telemedicine, direct. But our challenge is, and we've done a good job bringing high-speed broadband all the way up to through the Bethel region. Now we're pushing it up to Barrow. As soon as we get more of that installed, I feel very confident that we'll have a much better impact in providing direct services. Last thing on this, in the Affordable Care Act, which gets, you know, bashed around quite a bit, one of the things that was added was creating equity with those who are experiencing mental illness or mental service needs. And an example is, it's no longer, you know, you break an arm, we're right there for you. With mental health services, call us in 6 months. Now, through the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies and others have to treat it equally, which is a huge step in the right direction.
Gary, you got more?
Yes. Well, thank you for your response, and I'll try to get down to your office to deal with the VA issue.
Excellent. Tom Moyer or Janelle there in our Fairbanks office would be happy to help you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Gary, thank you so much for your call from Fairbanks, and we'll go back, I think, to the Syria issue yet one more time as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Providence Imaging Center, with its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, ultrasound, and digital X-ray to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com.
And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
Talk of Alaska. Senator Mark Begich is live in our studio, and of course there's stuff happening in Washington. So to get an hour with the senator right now is there's plenty to be talked about.
There is.
And we are. Let's go to Bob, joins the program from Soldotna. I know he's been holding for a while, but Bob, I wanted to give you a chance to see if we had adequately covered the issue about Syria there, or if you had more for Senator Mark Begich.
Well, yeah, good morning, Steve, and good morning, Mark. I am a bona fide Alaskan citizen. I was born here at statehood, and I met your family back in the 60s, I think, up in Fairbanks around golden days. You're just a bit younger than I am, and I'm just a bit younger than your brother Nick.
There we go.
I got a couple of comments here about maybe Syria and our involvement there, and I want to ask about Iranian oil. Anyway, you know, that was when Saddam used gas on the Kurds. That was part of our reason to go in there and start a no-fly zone, which eventually led to other things, as we know. You know, and our involvement in Iraq, I think it's destabilized the whole region. But, you know, no matter how accurate our missiles are, you know how these people operate over there, they're going to load up what they feel are potential targets with civilians. And if we do send missiles in there, I can just see on the TV crying women, you know, crying for their dead children, and you know, that just seems to how it operates over there, Mark, and it's a sad thing. But I also wonder how much of this insurgency is maybe being backed by one of the 18 clandestine organizations that we send around the world to, you know, the CIA being one of them. I don't know, you know. Anyway, but, and I was watching the news the other night, and the new leader in Iran, he wants to start exporting his oil. You know, every time there is some kind of a revolt in one of these oil-producing companies, the price of oil just shoots up. You know, so we may be getting Iranian oil if the United States will stop their embargo with Iran. Maybe we could be friends with these people. You know, the Iranian people aren't so bad, but maybe their government people have their government officials have other ideas. You know, they say we have a glut of refined fuel in this country now. But refineries have over-refined gasoline and gas products, fuel products, but the prices don't seem to be going down. And, you know, Mark, I think for people that are struggling in this economy right now, and I know it's probably been said over and over again, I think this is something we also need to look at. But I wish you the best of luck, Senator, and maybe we'll meet again one of these days. I've been a long, long time. I was just a little boy, and you were just a little boy, but little boys grow up.
There we go. Bob, I look forward to when I'm in the Kenai. I was in the Kenai-Soldotna region earlier last week, during last week, and I'm sorry we missed each other. But let me just say this. First off, the issue with Iran and their oil, you know, obviously we would prefer that the Iranian government be more responsive, especially to our efforts to ensure that they don't have nuclear weapons. And those inspections, they're not very responsive. So we've done a lot of sanctions on them economically to squeeze the government as hard as we can. And that is creating, as you know, a lot of unrest within the people of Iran. Because, I, you know, your point about the Iranian people have maybe a different view or could have a different view of the government is worthy of discussion. But I would say this, that Iran has now figured out that they want to sell their oil to Iraq because Iraq can't produce enough yet for their own internal utilization. The problem with that is, of course, just to be very frank with you, what Iran needs is hard currency. But we, you know, without using weapons and other engagement, their economic sanctions are starting to have some impact, not significant yet, but we want to be careful where we go with Iran. On the other issue, in the broader sense, you know, the issue again with Syria or the whole region, we have to have a much more aggressive international engagement in what's going on there than just us trying to be the police officer for the world, and especially for the Middle East. One, we can't afford it with the lives of Americans, and we can't afford it economically. It would be great to have diplomatic resolution to many of these things, but it's clear in Syria with the use of chemical weapons, which is against international law, is not on the list of the leadership of Syria. And so we have to engage the international community to try to find a resolution to this. You know, the last thing you want is more bloodshed and more lives lost. So I understand your comments, and again, hopefully we'll see each other maybe one of these days when I'm coming through the peninsula area.
Let's go over to Sue, who we've reconnected with in Wrangell. Sue in Wrangell, you're on the air with Senator Mark Begich. Let's try it again.
All right. Good morning, Senator Begich. I met you in, can you hear me?
Yes, perfect. Okay. A lot better.
All right. I met you in Sitka last year when you got your Clinkett name. And I was actually born before, 9 years before we became a state. I met your mother when she was campaigning for your dad back in 72.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to let you know that I have been moved back in Alaska since the early 90s, and I got 3 college degrees, and I got some federal loans that amounted to $25,000, and it's now up to $150,000 because I can't pay it. I live in Wrangell where it's a depressed economy, and when I lived in Juneau, the cost of living was too high for me to be able to pay both Alaska student loan and federal loan. So I don't know if there's anything you can do to help me, but I did get in touch with Green Student, and but I called the Attorney General's office and Secretary of State, and they said that it's a brand new organization only since August 9th. And so I really don't know what to do. I was asking for your help.
Thank you. One thing I'd recommend is maybe if you can call Bob Weinstein in my Ketchikan office, we can do a little follow-up with you. Second, there is a new element of student loan programs that are based on income, in other words, where they can adjust the payment level to appropriately respond to where you are economically. That's worth the discussion. Also, going from $25,000 to $150,000 in loans because of that you couldn't afford to pay them or so forth. I don't know if those are federal loans or private loans, but, you know, definitely I think it's well worth contacting our office, especially after we just passed the new student loan program. There might be some opportunities to help relieve some of that debt. Now, on top of that, I will tell you, I know the Wrangell community is working through an issue, which we've been helping them. build a new hospital, medical facility there, which we think will be a fantastic opportunity for new jobs in the region. Oh. I know there's some controversy a little bit on the land, but I think they're working that all out. This will be about a $25 million facility, providing incredible amounts of jobs for the Wrangell area, something we intervened with within my first year or two in office with the Secretary Vilsack of the Agricultural Department, because it takes a loan guarantee, which we were able to help secure. This will be a long-term benefit to Wrangell, because then you become a regional hub for medical facilities and needs in the community. So that's just on the horizon that's coming along. And my staff down there, Bob Weinstein, would be happy to give you some additional information on that. But on the student loans, do contact Bob, and maybe there's something we can help you there.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Have
Bye.
A great day, Sue.
Thank you, Sue and Wrangell. It's Mark Begich is our guest. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage of 550-8422. A stack of emails here, and, you'll like this one. You can knock this one out of the park.
Is it on Syria?
No, it's about, okay. It's about fish.
Oh, fish, fish, fish.
So Dexo Corporation, which supplies food to the armed services, has backed off on its decision to exclude Alaska seafood from its menu because the salmon wasn't MSC certified.
Yes.
How are you feeling about that change, and do you think Walmart can be convinced to do the same?
Yes. Let me just say that.
Out of the park.
Yeah, there we go. As you know, we aggressively engaged in this issue. As the chair of the Ocean Subcommittee for the U.S. Senate, I have jurisdiction over fisheries and obviously the Magnuson-Stevens Act reauthorization. But when Walmart made their decision, you know, we wrote them a scathing letter. I actually called Walmart directly, talked to the vice president, and it was clear to me they were reconsidering their whole decision. They're going to be meeting, I think it's next week, with our folks here in Alaska on how to get to the understanding of what sustainable is, because obviously we have sustainable fisheries here. We think it's an incredible example of what should be done around the country. It's not perfect, but it sure is better than what's going on around the country. I think when I had that time on the phone with Walmart, they clearly recognized that this made a lot of sense, and so they're going to be meeting with our fish marketing folks here in Alaska. Second to that, Sodesco wrote a pretty strong letter to the president of the company. They responded, I think it was a couple days ago, when I decided to make a direct call to the president. I think that the staffs all started screwing around and decided, well, we better get an answer here. The letter was very positive that they were moving back into the direction of ensuring Alaska seafood products were part of the mix. But saying that, we need to kind of seal the deal. They have agreed through a conversation I had with them, I think it was Friday, on the phone, that they would now put together, again, another meeting like Walmart's, where they're going to meet with our folks here in Alaska to just understand how we do sustainable fisheries so they can feel comfortable with that, because they believe in sustainable fisheries. So do we. And we think we have the premier example of how to do it right. So we're very happy where they're moving toward, but we want to kind of close the deal so they make a good, strong announcement, both them and Walmart. But as chair of the fisheries committee that deals with this, you can rest assured from Alaska's perspective, they're going to hear from me on a daily basis. Even our folks in Domino's, when they were a little confused on halibut.
We have several other people that have definite constituent issues here, but there's also a stack of them now on a pebble mine issue.
Sure.
And I can pretty well summarize what the most they're saying is similar to what Megan says. Thank you for supporting science when it comes to the pebble mine and the watershed assessment. I look forward and hope you are willing to have a stronger voice with regard to pebble mine in the future. And I think you can assume that Megan, that as opposed to the mine.
Right. This is one thing, and I know it's hard for some Alaskans, because when they come up and talk with me, they say, why haven't you taken a position stronger? And part of it is because we're waiting for the science to be completed. And as you know, EPA is going through that process right now. Even though I did not like this kind of review of the review, they should have been done by now. I mean, this whole process of continuing to review the reviewers, it seems like a delayed process. But saying that, yeah, I feel very confident that we're getting close to a conclusion here with the science being delivered by EPA. It will tell us a lot of what the ability is of any kind of mining activity in that watershed. And from there, I'll make you can be reassured and be clear that I'm going to make a strong position on how I feel about the mine based on that information. But on top of that, Steve, I want to make clear that does not mean I oppose mines if I come out opposing it at some point. I want to see the science. But, you know, I've supported Bocan, Niblack. Donlin Creek is a very positive step in what they're doing. Fort Knox, I've been up there. Red Dog, we helped them double their capacity up there through some work we did through the administration. But we look at each project by the project, not a blanket statement. And Pebble is one of those very complicated projects, and I'm anxious for EPA to finish their work so we can then, and I can make a more definitive and much stronger position one way or another in regards to that science. But science is an important part of our decision-making process here. Now, I know sometimes we love the EPA and sometimes we hate the EPA. Just depends on the day. As we heard earlier, I think the first caller, if I remember right, more placer mining, because that's the sense I got too, is when she was describing it. But either way, you know, this one, they're a third party kind of, they're not vested interest in either side on this. They're just trying to figure out this watershed impact. And so I'm anxious for them to finish this. And I think it will be finished in probably the next 30 to 60 days.
Where do you think the power is going to come from Donlin Creek?
You mean for the mine?
Donlin Creek, yeah.
Oh, Donlin Creek. I'm sorry. I thought you said down the creek.
Yeah,
Donlin Creek.
Yeah.
Donlin, you know, I think
they need a hell of a lot of power.
They
for
do,
that thing.
And they're, you know, they've moved to a decision which I think is a very positive decision of natural gas coming out of the Cook Inlet in a pipe, and I think that's the right decision, because if they do that pipe right, they'll oversize that pipe. And that could be a huge boon for long-term power electrification for rural Alaska and the Bethel region, the most impoverished area, as you know, in Alaska. And part of it is the energy costs are just wiping out communities. I mean, you cannot run your home on diesel in the winters and expect to be affordable. And so I think Donlin originally had diesel all 100%. But now this idea of the gas line, actually, literally last night at an event, I was talking to one of the principals staying there at Donlin Creek about this issue, specifically about the energy consumption. And I'm feeling pretty good about the natural gas component. Of course, I'd love them to really oversize it more so we can then create a power generation and then use power lines at cheap natural gas costs to tie in the Bethel region. That would be, can you imagine the Bethel region on low-cost energy? For the most impoverished area of our state, being able to be able to have some of the more moderately priced energy, it'd be fantastic.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Our guest is Senator Mark Begich, and it's clear that there's a large volume of calls of people that have very specific issues that they would like to talk to the senator about, and we're not going to have time for all of them. And so if you would, maybe you can kind of refresh our memory as to how people would get in touch with you best, Senator.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, they can call our Anchorage office here, 258-9305-907, obviously 258-9305. But they can also go online, baggage.senate.gov. It's a great way to communicate with us. Send us an email, figure out our contact numbers. Also tonight, if you're in Anchorage, we have a back-to-school town hall meeting occurring at Campbell Elementary School at 6 o'clock tonight. So, you know, it's another opportunity for people, especially around school issues. School's back in, and as you imagine, a lot of questions now about education are coming to our attention.
Well, we got a veterans issue next.
Great.
The Homemaker Program, which I got from my World War II vet dad, provides disabled vets 2 hours of care 5 days a week, yet it goes through a third party, a health service company, awarded the contract. These employees are paid $9 an hour of the 25 per hour the VA provides. So who's the winner? The middleman. You should do something about this, she says.
You know, our care workers, doesn't matter if it's in the VA or in Health and Human Services or Indian Health Services, I can go through the list when they're doing in-home care, and that's what I think he's talking about there specifically.
Yeah.
The wages are not...
Yeah, her dad's in Florida, actually.
Yeah, so it's in-home care. Mm-hmm. Is not the number that should be what we should be looking for. They don't get paid enough, and the amount of work they do is significant. And these people, when you meet them, they're dedicated, hard workers. But I didn't realize there was that gap between 9 and 25. It's worthwhile for us to look at, absolutely, because if you don't have good quality care takers, and at $9 an hour, I don't care what you say, you cannot live on that. And I know some people say, you know, oh, I used to live on $9, you know, tell the stories. Well, I'm telling you, $9 an hour is not an acceptable wage if you are trying to provide incredible care for individuals.
Let's go to this is from Jan. I don't understand this one at all, Senator, but you probably do.
Don't count on it.
Well, it has a bill number attached. Senate Bill 896. You authored it to amend Title II of the Social Security Act to repeal the government pension offset and windfall elimination provision.
Okay. This one, yes, I do know this. There are about 24 states that are affected by this. Here's an example of what it means. If you're a teacher and your school district did not pay into Social Security, so you have some, you know, TERS, Teacher Retirement System, you're going to get a retirement check on. But if you're a teacher, and let's say you worked the summer and you were working for a company in the summertime who paid Social Security for those wages they paid. What happens is when you get ready to retire and you get your teacher's retirement system retirement check, which, of course, in that system, you paid no Social Security, but you got your retirement check. And then you want to go collect your Social Security on the amount you did pay in on that second job you had. It gets, because you have another retirement by a non-Social Security paid system, you get that deducted from your Social Security. It's an offset, which is totally outrageous because what you're basically saying is, yep, you paid into Social Security, but you're not getting it. Despite the fact you did pay into another system and you get a retirement check, why should we penalize someone who had two jobs and they have two retirements? Why should we penalize them? It makes no sense at all. And so what we're trying to do is fix that. It's an expensive fix, but it's important. And my view is very simple. If you pay into Social Security, it's a retirement program, small amount or large amount, whatever that is you paid in, you should get back through retirement. And if you're not going to get it back and the federal government's just going to take it from you because you have another retirement, then you should get your money back that you paid into it. And that's what we're trying to do is fix this. This has been an ongoing effort from, you know, almost two decades now. And we have bipartisan support on it. And that's what this bill does. And it really protects and takes care of a lot of Alaska workers who have multiple jobs. Why should they get penalized? Because they got a couple jobs and they have two different retirements.
So yeah, the comment was, what can we do out there to push this?
We need people to contact our website, let us know that you're supportive. And then we need to make sure that we, if you have friends in other states, go to that. You'll see that bill. You'll see who's the sponsors on it now. And then you should see what states aren't on there. And if you have friends in those states, you're going to need to contact us.
Right. Mark Begich is our guest. It's Talk of Alaska. We got about 4 minutes left. And this one from Anonymous, who says, what can we do to speed up the hiring process for physicians at the VA?
Yeah.
And you probably already know about this, but yes. He says, I know a physician personally who's working 70-hour work weeks, 40-hour pay, only because of dedication to patients. They are the only doctor in their specialty for the state. How can we get through the needless paperwork?
Yeah, we have a new director that started. I think she's been on now only 4 months, 5 months, which she is very motivated, very excited, which is good. Our biggest strength or our position has been to get mental health providers nationwide. We were so short on these. So we've hired over 1,600 nationwide. We have about 90 now in Alaska, which is fantastic. Now they're moving into physicians, physician assistants, as well as looking at the services provided for women veterans. But we have been pushing on them on this. We have a new director. I feel like we're going to have some headway here. So the Mr. Anonymous or Mrs. Anonymous who made that one, let us know as you in the next month or so if you're not seeing the progress, because you obviously have some good insight there. You can call our office anonymously also if you'd like and let us know kind of the progress. But I will tell you the new director is going to have some push, and that's why we brought the VA up here. We had a hearing yesterday, and then we took them to Fairbanks too. So we had them going to Anchorage and Fairbanks in one day talking to veterans. And our point was these kinds of issues that came up. This was one of them that did come up.
Let's go to Michael, joins the program from Anchorage. You're on the air with Senator Mark Begich. Michael.
Hey, Senator. I'm calling on the Pebble Project. I personally don't have a dog in the fight. I don't work in the resource industry and never have. For starters, I'm not an engineer, and I don't have the back to be a miner. But I'm concerned about the EPA's so-called Pistol Bay Assessment and the fact that there's so many groups trying to ignore science and just make an emotional-based no, we can't have a mine. I simply want to ask that you support the full process and let the permitting go through. If the guys at Pebble can prove through all the agencies, and you know that wouldn't be easy, that they can do a mine safely, then we make a decision and let them do it. But if they can't prove through the existing process, the existing permit processes, that modern mining can be done safely, only then do we tell them no.
All right, Michael, you got 20 seconds, and you're off the hook.
Yeah, let me just say real quickly, Michael, first off, I do support the efforts on the science, and you're right about that. I also have said we cannot have a preemptive strike by EPA, so that, I think, goes to your concern there.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator Mark Begich.
We had a full load, as always, Steve. This was great.
It was a lot of fun. It's always a pleasure to have you in here, and I hope something gets accomplished when you get back to Washington.
Well, I think we're going to have a big firefight on the budget issue, so we'll look forward to it. We'll keep you in touch. Thanks,
right.
Steve.
Thanks so much to our crew today, Dave Waldron, BD Trantina, and Pat Yak. Pinch hitting. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.